Hi, Mark.
Hello?
Hey there.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Doing well. How about you?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Great. Glad this worked out.
Yeah.
Chat tonight. So, hey, if you're ready, let's just get right down to it.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Let's start with your year of graduation and your major.
So I graduated from Contemporary Writing and Production in May of 2012.
Perfect. And what was your primary instrument or principal instrument?
Bass guitar.
Very cool. I took bass less guitar lessons for about a year after I got the Berkeley job.
Nice.
And long enough to confirm the existence of talent.
That's good.
Okay, great. Well, hey, we'll get to your history later. But for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
So I am a software engineer for a managed infrastructure company. Essentially, what we do is we offer IT outsourcing for businesses at the mid-level to enterprise level. So,
Now, managed infrastructure, so you mean like computer infrastructure?
exactly. Yeah, we do servers, networking. We have a very large set of mainframe clients. So, these older companies that use the giant big iron mainframes, with the magnetic tapes and, the whole nine yards. And so my team is actually responsible for building and maintaining the customer-facing applications to interact with all of our different services.
So in other words, somebody goes to some company and it looks like they're looking at the company's website, but it's your company which built and is maintaining that website.
So, yes, for the most part, we do mission critical workloads for different companies. So, for example, one of our clients is a payment card processor. So they do credit card, they process, millions of credit card transactions on a daily basis. And so all of their critical workloads are hosted on infrastructure that we maintain. We have a couple of big data centers across the country, and they're those they're the typical multi-level buildings that are like hyper cooled, and they have the really long rows of server racks and stuff. So websites is definitely part of it, but we're more or less enterprise IT.
Gotcha. So that's what your company does to get sort of subcontracts to handle all the computer-related stuff. And how about your specific job?
So we manage the customer-facing applications. So let's say a customer, maybe it's a mid-level company, and they have a new project that they want to undertake, but they need a couple of different servers, or they need some different platforms that they need managed for them because they don't have the in-house expertise. They would go into our applications, and they could you request a solutions architect to help them out, or they could provision several servers and get an idea of how much it's going to cost them, or they can interface with our tech support, or any number of different things.
Now, my wife does work in computers. She's a software quality engineer. So I know a little bit of this vocabulary. So are you dealing with the front end or the back end?
Both. Well, it depends on what you consider back end. So, I am primarily developing front end applications, but
Yeah, and I should, for listeners, front end. What people are actually seeing, back end, all the processing to make stuff work.
generally. So we develop both where we see fit. So I'm not necessarily developing the applications that make the mainframes run, but we do have some server-side processing for things like integrating with our ticketing system that tech support uses, or integrating with the various monitoring platforms that are set up to like let people know when their servers are running too hot, or you know, those kinds of things.
Gotcha. So, like, how long are you on a given project? Like, do you have this one customer you work for? Are you working for 30 different customers? Like, how many different tasks are you doing at any one time, and how quickly do they come and go?
Well, our main focus is our what we call our gateway application, and that's sort of the, you know, the initial point that the customer interacts with the company. So they would come in and they would have they would sign some contracts, or you know, sign up for some services, and they would utilize this portal to basically manage their day to day with the company. Our team doesn't specifically work for any one client. We really work for the benefit of all of the clients. So we're not so much tied down to one individual client project, so much as, you know, creating an interface for all of the clients to utilize.
Understood. And by the way, how big is your company?
It's about, well, let's see, it was 750, but we just recently acquired another company, so it's approaching 1,000. It's either just at 1,000 or just over 1,000.
Gotcha. And are you part of a team?
Yeah, we're about, depending on the day, about 6 people. There are three other software engineers, and there's one QA architect, and then it's myself and our product owner.
And you're one of those software engineers?
Yes.
Gotcha. And within the people in your group, the three of you, are you guys more or less interchangeable in terms of, you know, any random project comes along and whoever's free is on it, or do you each have your specialty?
Well, we come from different backgrounds, but our team takes on the mentality of sort of everybody is an engineer, so you know, one person isn't specifically the quality assurance engineer, and one person specifically isn't the automation engineer, and one person specifically isn't, you know, a DevOps engineer, which is really great because we all get to do a little bit of everything. And we actually practice pair programming, which is essentially, you know, if your skills are better in a particular area than someone else on the team, when a particular work item comes through that focuses on that particular area, you might bring in one of the other engineers to, you know, show them how, you know, kind of show them the ropes essentially, and give them some experience developing that particular area.
That's smart from the company's point of view, so they're not totally kneecapped if someone leaves.
Yeah, it's a very good way of working. We take a lot from, I don't know if you've heard of a software company out in California called Valve, or they might be in Washington. I can't remember. They're on the West Coast somewhere. They're primarily a video game company, and they have their operations manual was leaked, like their HR internal operations manual. And there's a lot of really awesome kind of, you know, modus operandi in there. And one of them is the concept of everybody is an engineer. And so it's, you know, we kind of take a lot of that to heart, but it's a lot of fun.
Gotcha. By the way, about how many hours a week do you work? I'm sure it varies, but
it does. It's usually no less than 35, no more than 45. It's fairly easygoing hours. But you know, I mean, there's like this week, for example, we're we're a little behind on one particular part of our project, and so we're putting in a little extra time. But it's pretty relaxed. I enjoy it.
Very nice. Hey, can we zoom in just a little bit, and could you describe your typical day at work, or if those vary too much, your typical week?
Sure. Usually we follow, we practice Agile. So our work
That's like
is
a 2 week development cycle where you try to make a little change to the program every 2 weeks.
Yeah. So it's focused on iterative development over, and that particular flavor, the 2 week flavor, is called Scrum. So we practice Scrum, and so it can vary day to day, but essentially at the beginning of the 2 weeks, we go through a process called sprint planning, where we examine the backlog of outstanding work items, which are called stories, user stories specifically. And we, the product owner has prioritized them, in the order of importance that they want to get them done. And we look at them, we estimate, what the relative level of complexity is to get them completed. And we plan to what's called a velocity, which is essentially an average of the amount of work that we get done in a given sprint. And then the entirety of the sprint, it is left up to us on how to get that done. So we essentially commit to the body of work, and then we're given the next 2 weeks to complete that work. But so from day to day, it's usually, we'll all jump on. So we have people down in Conway, Arkansas, that are on our team as well. And so we'll jump on our WebEx meeting rooms, and we'll kind of, we'll share screens here and there. We'll split out the tasks for a specific story. And, if we're doing some pair programming, we'll do some of that. But it's mostly, we just kind of, we hit the programming pretty hard for basically the whole day. But yeah, it's more or less on a 2 week by 2 week basis.
There's some testing that happens toward the end.
Right. So what we've been trying lately is a concept called swarming. And the principle behind that is, we might have larger items of work, but since we have all hands focusing on that particular work, then supposedly it gets done a little faster. But so we'll try to, we'll do a little bit of upfront to figure out, what might this testing effort look like once it's developed, what might the development effort look like, and we'll start to sort of delegate out tasks. So if somebody's writing some automation scripts that will eventually test what the application has, that might be going on at the exact same time as the actual development work. And what's neat is we have a set of tools that allow us to do that in real time across multiple different workstations. So we're pretty fortunate to have the tools that we do, because it really suits our work style. But it prevents us from running into one of my least favorite problems with the software development lifecycle, which is the developers develop for the first week, and then the testers have to test, and their queues get bogged down way towards the end, and they're usually rushed at the end. So it's actually pretty nice the way we got it going.
Very cool. All right. So, hey, to do these interviews, one of the criteria, which you said you meet, is that you enjoy what you do, at least being in your field. So I'm curious, what is it about your field, or if you wish, your job, that you like? You definitely sound enthusiastic about it. Just like to hear you articulate for the listener.
Well, I think developing software is almost an art form. It is an art form. It's creative problem solving. At a very, with very tangible results. There's the the day to day, you know, we normally have features that, you know, either come from just, you know, we're anticipating that the users might want something like this, or, you know, users have told us, you know, hey, we wish we could, you know, make this a little bit easier. You know, and they're real life problems that we're solving creatively using code. So it's not just, you know, like I wouldn't want to be necessarily, you know, something like a database administrator or, you know, sort of a, you know, in like tech support or something like that. Because, you know, where I am, I get to, you know, I get to develop cool things. I get to create. And so I think where, you know, where it really rang true with me was, you know, that ability to be creative. Because there's 1,000 different ways to solve any one problem in technology. You know, there's hundreds of different frameworks and platforms and solutions that other people have written, and things you can use and things you can copy from, and you know, doing it your own way is it's pretty satisfying when you compile your program or you run your code and you see, oh wow, that did exactly what I thought it was going to do, and you know, now I, you know, if I automate something, you know, now I don't have to do that in the future, you know, manually. I can just not worry about it. So it's, yeah, I think it's the creative aspect of it that really drew me to it. So
very nice. Okay, so again, you graduated back in 2012. We curious, let's take it back to 2012, or if you wish earlier. I mean, were you thinking you'd be programming computers?
Or so
I was gonna say, like, take us to your headspace then. Where were you at? And then we'll go like step by step everywhere you went until you landed where you are now.
Sure. So I've always been into computers. I actually, when I was, man, it was probably when I was 11 or 12, I had taken some online courses about HTML, which is the basic building blocks of web applications. And, you know, so I've always been into computers and video games. And actually, when I was in high school, my freshman and sophomore year of high school, I figured I was going to go to college for computer science. You know, I've always been a big music geek too. And then my junior and senior year, I had a teacher in high school who really pushed me into music, which eventually led me to Berkeley. And you know, while I was at Berkeley, I was trying to decide between CWP and the production
MP&E music production.
Yeah, MP&E. Yep. And I eventually went into CWP because there was still the compositional aspect of it. And so, you know, but it was still, you know, there was still a good technology side to it. And so after I graduated Berkeley, I'd been working at a music studio out in Cambridge, and, the producer and I had a little bit of a falling out. And while I was trying to find other work, I had thought about going back to school, because this was shortly after I had graduated. And so I started to think, well, maybe,
so
you know, because I wasn't
like,
really.
You were looking for a job, no real luck.
Yeah, yeah, it was a bit of a hard scene in 2012, in Boston.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, well, maybe I could go back to school. So I was looking around for some advanced degrees in something music technology, and I thought, well, you know, where better to look than MIT? And so looking around their site, I happened upon this part of their site called OpenCourseWare, and I don't know if you've
Isn't that like they have all their courses up on the internet where people can take them for free? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You don't get credit for it, right? But at least you can kind of do it.
Right. Yeah. They have videos of the lectures, and they have, you know, some of the courses, and not all of them are fully fleshed out, but some of them have the quizzes, some of them have the handouts and the assignments. And so one that I took was a CompSci 101. It was an intro to computer science.
By the way, can I just ask, so you graduated in May. Is this like then September that you start doing the computer?
Yeah, roundabouts.
Gotcha.
So I started, you know, taking some of these lectures, and you know, I was getting pretty. I mean, it was in a programming language called Python, which I don't really code in these days, but it was you know, it's actually a really good language to learn some of the fundamental concepts on. So I was going through these, you know, I was going through these lectures, and there were challenging problems, you know, that now today seem kind of silly, but you know, at the time was like, wow, you know, I really don't know how this makes any sense, but you know, you start to go through these and you get a little more progress, a little more progress. And by the end of the course, I really wanted some more. And by this time I was, you know, I was just waiting tables and, you know, just to keep some money coming in. And one of my colleagues was actually, I can't remember where he was going. I don't think it was Northeastern.
Meaning a fellow Berkeley grad or a fellow waiter?
No, this was just a guy I was waiting tables with.
Gotcha.
But he was one of the colleges around the Fenway. He was taking web design. So he turned me on to CSS and JavaScript, and he said, "Hey, you got to pick up these books called The Missing Manual." And it's kind of like one of those Four Dummies series, but it's a little more advanced than that. And so I'd always been interested in web applications, mm-hmm. Because I wanted to take that and transition it into mobile apps, you know, make the next best mobile app and, you know, make a killing and, you know, retire to the Bahamas. But so I started to get into it and I had actually taken, so my father, owns his own law firm up in suburban Illinois where I live now. And he had an old 2001, basic HTML website. That was four pages. It was probably 500 lines of code in total. Very, very old, very, very out of date. And so what I did is I scraped the HTML off of his web pages, and I started to use it as sort of my training ground for, you know, reading through these books and practicing the different concepts.
I figured out exactly how this website was built from the ground up.
Yeah, exactly. And so by the end of my reading of these books, I had something that looked pretty good. And so I sent my dad a couple screenshots, and he goes, "Wow, this is really nice. I want to buy that from you."
Oh,
and
nice.
So I was like, "Okay, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'll buy it from you. Or I'll let you buy it from me." And so that was essentially my first professional work.
Quick timeline here, like about how long did it take you to get this far?
That was probably November of that year.
So like a few months.
A few months, yeah. It was, you know, it was kind of on and off, you know. You know, you'd do it on the weekends, do it at, you know, at night after you came home. But then I went back, to Illinois over the Christmas break, and I showed it to, another family member, and, he designs, golf courses. So he like draws up, new placement for bunkers and fairways and, you know, basically ways to upgrade the playing experience. And so he was like, "Hey, you know, I'm trying to redo my website. You want to do that for me?" And I go, "Sure, I'll give it a try." He said, "But there's one thing I want the ability to publish a newsletter on my site." And so what ended up happening is during the time that I was helping him out with his site, I picked up some server side languages. PHP was the one that we had built his newsletter in. So, you know, some basic site login functionality, some basic things that he could do to save images and, you know, upload images and PDFs to his own site, and then craft, you know, an interactive newsletter. And at the end of our this was probably about February, March of the following year that we finished that up.
2013, you mean?
Yeah, about 2013. And he said, sweet, I'm going to buy this from you. And so that was my second professional piece of work.
I mean, I know this is family, so if you want, don't want to go into great details, you don't have to, but, like, are we talking, like, enough money, you know, are they paying you enough that you're actually, like, making the rent here, or was it, you know, sometimes
no.
They buy something that's symbolic, right?
No, it's, I mean, it was, you know, it was kind of, I mean, for, it wasn't professional rates. We'll leave it at that.
Sure.
You know, it was enough to pique my interest to say, hey, you know, I might have something here. So that following summer, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, we moved out here to Illinois.
Can I ask what sparked the move? Just.
It was kind of the job market in Boston wasn't great, for me, obviously, and
during that year, were you still looking for music related jobs, or had you sort of?
It kind of tapered off. I mean, I lost, you know, as I started to gain more and more ground in the website stuff. You know, my interest in the music industry sort of started to fade. And then there was an incident that happened with my wife that, kind of sparked our move, out here. We were ready for a change, for a nice fresh start. And all of my family's out here. So it was a good decision,
yeah,
but,
totally cool. Sometimes people move for different reasons. So I've heard, you know, the story of one person goes to grad school and the other follows. Or
no, we were just looking for a fresh start.
Cool.
But when we moved out here, I started working with my uncle, who's an independent IT consultant, small business focus. You know, he does things like, you know, handle computer hardware, Microsoft Active Directory. Email accounts. He runs a couple of Exchange servers. You know, he essentially goes out to all of his different client sites and helps people with their day-to-day needs. And one of, you know, so I was helping him do that for a little bit. So, you know, at least it was work in the technology sphere, which is where I started to focus most of my time. And I had worked with him for a while. I got to meet one of his colleagues who was starting to do a little bit of app development, for a mobile application.
Can I ask that? Because it sounds like what your uncle is doing is very different from basic web development. Because initially you were doing the web development route. And just as an aside, your story for the first part, I'd heard several similar stories where I've interviewed several web developers who kind of bootstrapped themselves into, you know, learning web development and then just stuck with that.
But right, so yes.
You're now going in another direction.
Yeah, so it was definitely different, but it was at least in the right, sphere. You know, it wasn't waiting tables.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was just about as much as I could get with the experience that I had. So I worked with him for a little while. I met one of his colleagues who was beginning to do a little bit of a mobile app development for a solution to a program called PC Law, which is actually a time tracking and billing software. That application actually kind of fell through. We never really made any good progress on that, but I was working with him, and then while I was, it was about, man, it must have been March or April of 24. This would be 2014 now.
So you've done about a year working for your uncle, taking on various tasks.
But yeah, about 6-7 months.
Okay.
And so working, you know, I was working with him, and I started to want to get back into the web sphere. So I started applying for jobs on Craigslist for, you know, web developer. And I had applied to a couple of postings that were hosted by a recruitment firm in the city of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I eventually applied to enough of them where they actually reached out to me and said, hey, why don't you come down to our offices and we'll get you a profile and we'll actually, you know, find out what your interests are, what your skill set is, and we'll give you, you know, targeted opportunities, you know, targeted contract opportunities. And so I'm like, sure, why not? So I took the train down and met with them, and they set up my portfolio and everything. And
could I just ask, were you still working for your uncle at this point? Had you tapered that off?
It had tapered off.
Go on.
I was just the business start. I mean, the springtime was a bit of a tough time for him.
This wasn't a totally full-time job. It was like when there was a lot of work, you worked a lot. When there was less, you worked less.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I was looking for other stuff, and, you know, so this recruiting firm had gotten my profile together, and it was about 3 or 4 weeks later, I got, an email, and it said there was this opportunity at the Pampered Chef, which was where I was working about a year ago. And it was for a front-end web developer in their digital marketing department. And I thought, well, hey, what the hell? Why not? Give it a shot. So I sent in my resume and cover letter, and eventually got a phone call to set up a phone interview. Mm-hmm. And the phone interview was probably the easiest thing I've ever done. It was way less knowledge than I figured I would need to know. And so eventually I got a contract spot.
Contractor in tech is basically you're like a temp worker, although unlike we generally associate with like administrative temps, contractors can be compensated very well in some cases.
Yeah, and that is the case for the vast majority of the industry. Contracts are interesting in the web sphere because I think more, unless they're very project specific, they're usually long-term contracts that can be renewed year over year over year. I've met plenty of contractors who just, you know, they treat it like a full-time job. It's just without the benefits and without the, you know, without the strings attached.
Right. Yeah. No benefits, but typically then the hourly, you know, is a nicer number.
Yes, that is the truth.
Yeah, my wife contracted and it was like, well, it'd be great to get this with benefits, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah. So, I started out as a contractor, and at the end of my first week or second week, my supervisor had pulled me into an office and said, yeah, we're going to try and hire you full time. So like, sweet, that was unexpected.
And that was what you wanted. You were doing web development.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so they brought me on full time at the end of June, of 2014. And I worked there. They went through an agile reorganization. At the end of 2014, beginning of 2015.
You said Pampered Chef. That sounds like a restaurant or something.
So Pampered Chef is a direct selling agency. They do kitchen products, you know, spoons and ice cream scoops and bakeware pans and hot, you know, specialty kitchen items. And so their IT department was actually about 60 people.
Okay, but so pretty substantial.
Yeah, nothing to sneeze at for sure. But I started out in their digital marketing department, and their entire company went through an agile reorganization at the end of 2014, beginning of 2015. And so one of the things that I had done while I was in the digital marketing department during the confusion, which you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of stories of companies going through agile reorganizations, but there is a lot of confusion. So during that time, I had familiarized myself with a couple of technology systems that it seemed nobody else in the company knew. And they were pertinent to day-to-day business, but you know, I'd been asking questions around and nobody seemed to have any answers. So I just started, you know, cause we were light on work because of the confusion. So I had a lot of time to research documentation and look up a bunch of different things. And before you knew it, I was the only person in the building who knew how the transactional email system worked. And so I started to separate myself from the digital marketing sector.
Can I ask, when you said you looked up and learned a lot of stuff, like, was this during your work hours or on your own time?
A little bit of both, more so on the work hours. But that was mostly because there was, you know, there wasn't a lot of work coming in because it was, you know, there was so much confusion going on. The political power was changing hands frequently, and it was kind of a mess. But it gave me a lot of opportunity to, you know, really, really dig in and understand some of these systems. When was it finalized? End of February, early March 2015, they had moved me down to, and I say down because it was on a floor below, the actual technology teams. So I was placed on the digital e-commerce technology team, and
that
happened.
With a raise, or was that just kind of changing your
job? No, it was a horizontal promotion.
Okay.
It was more of a consequence of the reorganization.
Sure.
I would say, I started to work on more of the e-commerce platform. Mission critical development side of the business, which was great because I was no longer just, you know, creating images and updating content. I was actually, you know, developing the core systems to, you know, expand the features of our site. I don't know how much you know about direct selling, but they sell most of their products through parties that independent consultants who sign up with the business will hold parties with their friends and their families and their friends and families.
And so it
requires it requires some significant processing. So we had an entire application that you could run your Pampered Chef parties from. We had a mobile app, and our web app was pretty sophisticated. On top of all of the traditional e-commerce stuff that you would expect from an online retailer. So I was developing on these systems, and it was a lot more challenging. You know, it was a lot more engaging. And so during my tenure there, there was a gentleman who I work with now, and this was about October of last year, who came onto our team as a scrum master. He was an agile coach, essentially. And we became fast friends, and about December-ish, our situation in the technology department kind of started to disintegrate. There was some pretty bad politicking going on, and it just became a not very friendly place to work, and we ended up
reorganization thing, or
I hesitate to say too many bad things about Pampered Chef.
Sure.
but there were some culture issues that just kind of turned me off. It was time for a change.
Time
and so Yeah, and so about February-ish, March, this gentleman that I was working with approached me with an offer from a guy he used to work with at this company called Insono, which is where I work now. And so we sat down together with my current boss, and he said, you know, we're basically a technology startup, but we have a workforce that's 20, 25 years old, and it's probably one of the greatest times you'll ever get to have the power of an enterprise but the flexibility of a startup.
Sorry, I think I missed it. Just, you said you were approached by this person, like, did he just find you, like, you got a message on LinkedIn or something one day?
Well, we had been so the guy who introduced me to my current boss, we had been working together at Pampered Chef for about 5 months.
Gotcha.
He my current boss and him had worked together at a past job, so it was sort of a friend of a friend type deal.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so he was looking for product owners, but he was also looking for front end developers. And so he asked me if I was interested. And I said, absolutely, I'm interested. It's time to go. And the rest is pretty much history. I mean, we've been working there since about April 1st. And it's been going great. I mean, I've been sort of thrust into a lot of things that I haven't done before, but are interesting and they're fun. And I mean, it's sort of accelerated that creative problem solving. And it's fantastic. I'm enjoying every minute of it.
That's wonderful. All right. Let's move on to the third and final part of the interview. My first question for you is, what, if any, is your current relationship with music?
It's fairly passive. I'm not going to lie. Being a software developer takes a lot of effort. It's a full-time job and then some. And you know, there are the things you get to do at work, and then there are the things that you want to do when you come home. You know, the open source projects and the, you know, the little one-off things that you wanted to try on company time but just couldn't bring yourself to do. So it's been a while since I've played. I keep an acoustic guitar out next to my bed that I fiddle around with every now and again. But it's mostly passive enjoyment these days.
I'm being totally listening honest. To music.
Yeah. Yeah, I still love to listen to music. I enjoy playing it when I get to, but it's definitely not as fervent as it was when I was in college.
Hey, no worries, no judgment. I've spoken with people who range the entire spectrum, meaning people who haven't, you know, barely listened to music all the way up to people who still gig regularly.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, next question I have for you. So obviously, people come into computer programming from many different backgrounds. I imagine you're among a distinct minority who went to music school.
It definitely is a talking point, that's for sure.
But like, okay, relative to other people, or, you know, maybe you could have gone to liberal arts school and then picked up computer programming. Is there anything where you look back at your Berkeley education and you're like, yeah, like, I'm glad I went to Berkeley because of this, or, you know, Berkeley, how did Berkeley do a good job preparing you for what you're doing now?
Well, from a strictly technical perspective, mm-hmm. And technical not meaning technological, but just technical, I think having a degree from an accredited university goes a long way these days. It's sort of the, you know, what it used to be. You had to have a high school diploma. Now you got to have a 4-year degree.
Right. A degree helps. A Berkeley degree, yeah, certainly is a college degree.
And, you know, it's definitely a conversation starter, especially in interviews. Oh, you went to Berklee College of Music? What is that? And why are you in tech now? But I think that my experience at Berkeley was great. You know, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, maybe I might have shot myself in the foot a little bit by not making as many connections as I could, not, you know, playing with, you know, gigging with the right people, or, you know, becoming friends with the people who knew people who knew people. And honestly, I, and from a sort of, you know, I'm going to say a non-professional view of it, I think that's really what you need to do to make it in the music business. But, you know, I think, as you know, what Berkeley allowed me to do, was to really explore my creativity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't your typical gen ed where you have to take, you know, geoscience, you know, and learn about rocks. Right. You know, I was, you know, able to, you know, play in a funk ensemble. You know, I was able to, you know, take an instrumental lab where I could sing and play the bass at the same time, which you could never do on a gig, right? you know, it allowed me to explore the history and production of video game music. You know, I took so many awesome courses, mm-hmm. you know, that really allowed me to, you know, really hone my passion for creativity. And I, you know, honestly, I've worked with several people who either have highly music backgrounds or, you know, have even had some formal musical education and are working in IT. I have some buddies from Berkeley who are working in IT. So I really think that music, you know, the musically inclined make great programmers, to be honest, because like I said, earlier, you know, it's highly creative. You know, I think that's a huge part of it. So, yeah, I think Berkeley really, really allowed me to hone my passion, for being creative.
Very nice. Hey, let's turn that question around now. Because you did go to Berkeley knowing it gave one degree, a bachelor's of music degree, and you went there. But all that said, is there anything where you look back at your Berkeley education and you say, you know, it would have been really useful to have learned this in college, and Berkeley could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
It's an interesting question.
You wish you'd learned what Berkeley... Given that it's a music school, right? They're not going to have computer science 1, 2, 3.
Right, yeah. I think it would have been awesome if there were more like career center type stuff. You know what I mean? Like how to interview, you know, how to go out there and find the jobs that you want to do, because a lot of the classes that I was taking, and this is probably true at every university, right? You know, a lot that you learn in classes is mostly theoretical. Mm-hmm. And you know, with the exception of some tracks, you know, medicine being one, law being another, probably, you know, there's not too much practicality in the things that you learn as it applies to, you know, getting you a job and getting out in the workforce per se. And part of it might just be the music industry itself. It's a pretty unique beast.
Sure.
But if there was one thing that I wish that I would have done better, or that, you know, Berkeley would have, helped me do better, is to look at it from a career aspect.
It sounds like you're even saying finding jobs not necessarily in the music industry. Like,
well, I mean, maybe even so far as those jobs in the music industry that you don't normally think of, right? Like you know, writing library music, or. I've been out of it in a while, so
it's all good. No, there definitely are a lot of niches beyond what most people think of. I remember talking to this woman where her company worked with advertising agencies and would try to find the appropriate music to be background during TV commercials. And you're like, okay, yeah, I guess someone does do that. So, okay, very nice. Next question I have for you, which is, you know, it sounds like just a few months after graduation, you started to return to your old passion of computers. And then, you know, the progression there was, you know, maybe a little bumpy, but certainly you kept pushing forward and going further and further in that direction until you currently are in a great place. But I guess what I'm saying is it only took you a few months to start out on that path once you left Berkeley. As you can imagine, there are a lot of other recent Berkeley graduates who have not yet found that path, whatever their path might be. And for those people, or anybody, say, in their last year of Berkeley, staring out into the big, scary world, what advice do you have?
I guess persistence is something that people really talk about a lot, and, you know, say, yeah, I'm persistent, but, you know, there's a lot of spaghetti dinners and a lot of foregone coffee runs and, you know, a lot of sacrifices that you got to make while you're trying to find that. And starving artists are no stranger to that. So that's not news, but it's hard to do that when you're also staring down an industry where, you know, 1-3% of people really make it, you know, and make it extremely successfully. And so it takes a strong mettle to really get through that. And I was lucky enough to have, you know, found an equal, if not larger, passion in an industry that's, you know, much, much bigger, right?
And you master the skills, you're almost guaranteed a decent job.
Yeah, and so, if you can find a passion in one of those types of fields, I mean, that's pretty good. But you really have to. You know, and I'm not saying you got to follow the money. You know, that's kind of that's probably a cop out. But you really got to think about, you know, what, you know, especially if you're going to be doing it for the rest of your life. You know, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I love music, but you got to do something that you love and that also allows you to do the other things that you love. You know, so I think there's a balance.
Sure.
At least that's what I've learned in my, you know, what has it been now? 3-4 years since I've graduated.
Hey, no, you're doing very well for yourself. Let's do a little variant of this question now, because I'm going to have you, you know, I don't know if you looked at the big index of interviews, which I sent you the link to, you know, but the interviews are all indexed by their career, and you're going to be something around like the 54th interview. I'm sure you can imagine very few people are going to go top to bottom and listen to all 54. Right? So, in other words, you're going to be there under probably software engineer. The people who are going to be listening to your interview are the ones who are saying, oh, hey, software engineer. Yeah, I wonder what that's like. Maybe, you know, people who have some potential interest in doing that. So for folks who are thinking about a possible career in software engineering, what advice do you have for them?
Don't pick a language that nobody else knows. Programming in Go is fun, but nobody programs in Go, so nobody's going to hire you to program in Go. JavaScript is probably the fastest growing market for younger people. But in that realm, there's a lot of really shoot from the hip type programming. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, some people love it, some people hate it. Be sort of a essentially what and this is harkening back to Valve, what they call the T person, where you have the trunk of the T, which is sort of your core strengths, and you know them very well and very in depth. But you also have the top of the T, which which reaches out across a lot of different topics that you may not be in depth on, but you at least have some sort of knowledge about. Architects get paid way more than QA engineers. So if you know, if you know a lot and you can, you can really, and architects usually have to be really experienced. It's a very experience driven industry, at least from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. But if you can get the job done, like right now we have no architects on our team.
Yeah. You're not a software architect at this
point. No, I am not, but I strive to be one. On our team, we have no architects, and we're architecting systems. We're doing it. It's fun. It's a lot of work. And it's pretty competitive the higher you go, but, get out there and do it. Build stuff.
And how about the
make a GitHub account. Just, code, show people your code, show things that work. It's all about what you got to show. So,
sure. And just to clarify, because you took a couple free courses at MIT and then you kind of redid these websites for family members' businesses, and then you got a computer consulting job. I mean, let's say someone who did not have those family connections, is that kind of the good starter path, is the free MIT courses and then pick up whatever low-level work you can, or is there specific places where you feel like it's a good way to get started?
Well, my experience is probably unique. I feel like I've had a lot of right place, right time moments in my career so far. But definitely, if you can get some small freelance stuff that's for not very much money, you can check out any of the I don't know if Elance is still a thing, or Odesk, or any number of those sort of online, small time gig sites. If you can get some code down, or even if you can just, kind of create your own application, make it do something for you. And then just have something to show. It's a lot easier to go into an interview and say, look at these cool things that I've made. I can help you guys make cool things as well. That's a much easier sell than, I know some of this stuff and I think I can help you guys out. The other advice I would have is eventually find a recruiter. A recruiting agency will allow you to take aptitude tests in 800 different different areas. I specifically took some in web development and HTML and JavaScript and stuff like that. And they'll help you build a portfolio. Like I said, I had two the family connections are nice, but again, when you go into an interview, it's like, oh, well, it was your family. What are they going to say? No. So it's a blessing and a curse, whereas I got the opportunity to create something that I could show. But it was also, I made it from my dad and my uncle. if you have something to show, people will have a baseline for whether or not you're qualified for whatever you're interviewing for. It's one of those things that I found you get better at as you practice. And there's tons of different directions within the field of, technology itself. I mean, I'm building web applications. In a few years I could be programming robots or, doing scientific calculations, on massive scale, or, monitoring the financial industry. I mean, there are tons of spaces that technology is in. And so find what you're passionate in and really, really work at it.
Awesome. Well, hey, I only have one last question for you, which is you have the mic, as they say, and you're being recorded. So is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
I don't think so. I mean, those probably more in depth than many interviews I've ever been on. Yeah, I just I feel like my foray into technology has really been a great transition. It's something that I'm really passionate in. I didn't know if I was going to be passionate in it right at the outset, but again, as I do it more and more, I mean, it's an extraordinary creative outlet. So it's brought me a lot of happiness. And if anybody's listening to this, and is interested in the field, I mean, just jump in and do it with both feet. Because it's a lot of fun. I love it.
Gotcha. Well, hey Mark, I really enjoyed this conversation. It's great to
Yeah,
talk to
thanks,
someone.
Kevin. It was awesome. Thanks a lot.
All right, great. Hey, look for a message from me in the very near future.
All right, will do.
All
Thanks a
right,
lot,
have a
Kevin.
great night.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.